What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Welcome to Ethnically Ambiguous, a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Ethnically Ambiguous. What an episode we have for you today. Wow.
I agree, Shireen. It is quite the episode. I like being robotic. We have a cartoonist, a writer, all around cool guy. Also a father. We didn't really even get into that, but whatever. They have a great book out that we're going to get into that we will name in this episode. Just wait for it. It's also in the description. So if you do get excited, you can really pop down. Remember, pre-orders matter. We are joined by Navid Mehdavian. Did I say that right? I think I went a little too Persian. I went a little too much of my dad.
Yeah, you can't go too Persian. My parents will be proud.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. We talked sort of about how your parents came to America, how you got into being a cartoonist, how you ended up in Idaho. A lot of great stuff is discussed.
Who are we? Where did we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Everyone, this is Shireen. Welcome to Ethnically Ambiguous.
And this is Anna. Welcome to Ethnically Ambiguous as well.
Yes, that's the start of the episode. Today, we are joined by a guest that is extremely fascinating. I've been reading about him and can't wait to get into his work. His name is Navid Mehdavian. Good, bad?
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Okay. There he is. He's right there. That was his voice. Thank you for being here. Hi.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah. I would say thank you again for joining us. But we each have to thank you because that's how we roll.
Yes. Yeah. We're each going to ask you the same question.
Yeah.
That's how we do this.
We each take turns asking the exact same question.
Exactly.
It's kind of a weird show. Welcome.
Welcome to the show.
I'll answer each question twice, and then you could just use whichever answer you
like. It's like being on set, you know, like you have to take the best take, you know.
Get ready for 8 hours.
You have a book coming out on September 12th. This episode will come out at the end of August, so you guys go get his book when it comes out on September 12th, go pre-order it. And it's a graphic memoir, which is really cool to me. You have experience as a cartoonist. So I guess I want to start there. I want to, before we get into the book, can you tell us like where you grew up and how you got interested in like drawing and stuff like that?
Yeah, I grew up in Miami and then lived in the Bay Area for about 7 years. And I mean, I doodled like every kid, but I started cartooning in my late 20s. I was a fifth grade teacher for a while. And so while doing that, I started drawing, and then I would try out my cartoons on the kids. Yeah. So, but they were like a captive audience and their grades were dependent on whether they laughed at the cartoon. So,
of course,
I don't know if they were a great audience, and they were 10 years old. So, but yeah, I mean, I didn't start doing it like professionally until my early 30s.
What was growing up for you like in Miami? Like, what was the demographic about like?
I don't think I saw a white person until I went to college.
Wow. So, I mean,
it was pretty, yeah.
That's beautiful.
It's pretty diverse. I mean, my main friend group, there was a couple Cuban Americans, an Italian, Pakistani American, and then me, Iranian American. And so, I mean, it was a pretty diverse group. And the school I went to was primarily Latino. So,
wow.
I mean, it's exactly what like Will Smith sang about in his song. So,
Oh, right.
Yeah.
The classic. The classic explanation of Miami. Wait, okay. So, how did your family end up in Miami?
Yeah, so initially they went to Oklahoma and they were there for a year, and then they decided that they probably shouldn't stay in Oklahoma and they moved to Miami. They moved a year before the revolution and the Iranian revolution, and then my dad was going to school in Oklahoma and then he got into the University of Miami and they left. And then after the Iranian revolution and the hostage crisis, they got word back from that the reception towards Iranians in Oklahoma had worsened.
That's good.
Right.
Okay, yeah.
So did your parents sort of like know anything about Miami, or were they very much just like, oh, we got in, let's just go there? Like, did they know it would be more like multicultural?
No, I don't think so. I don't think they knew what to expect when they went to Oklahoma, and I don't think they knew what to expect when they went to Miami.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
So they just happened to go from like white to no white.
Yeah. And then it just just by chance, that's where my sister and I were born. So rather than Oklahoma, which I'm sure would have been great, but just very different.
Just different. Yeah, probably a little different. Probably would not have seen your first white person in college.
Yeah.
Oklahoma. Where in Oklahoma were they? I'm just curious.
Tulsa.
Oh, that's so interesting, because Tulsa is now like considered the cool part of Oklahoma. I mean, you know, after everything that happened where they burned down, you know, the Black Wall Street. But
now
it's like, it's cool to be from Tulsa.
If only they would have stuck it out for like 30 years. They could have been the cool part. Yeah.
Well, no, you know what? I think it's interesting because like Tulsa, cool, whatever, you know, trendy, hip, probably different now. But Miami is like this cultural hub inside such like a dark state. Everything that you read about Florida, you're like, oh, okay, you're not really allowed to teach gender. You're not like allowed to teach about sex. Oh, you're not allowed to sort of acknowledge that someone might be gay. Slavery was a good thing. Like, it's so like everything is, you're like, wow, Florida. Then you're like, Miami. It's cool there.
Exactly.
Like strange bubbles.
Let's party.
Yeah,
well, and growing up there, I think, like, everything outside of Miami, you would joke that you were going south even though you were going north.
Yeah.
But it was, it was quirky, you know, and now suddenly Florida, it's just become so much darker and...
it's a weird place.
Less quirky.
Yeah.
Less quirky.
Yeah.
So, before you became, or were interested in cartooning professionally... growing up, did you feel like, did you know what you wanted to do as like a kid? Like, did you have like things you wanted to study and stuff like that?
I wanted to be a paleontologist after seeing Jurassic Park.
Oh, hell
so yeah.
Want to be? You weren't like, they'll eat us.
No. I had a dinosaur club.
Nice.
And so it was pretty serious. I don't know. I mean, I kind of hopped around and college, it was the same, sort of hopping from one thing to the next, which is why it took 5 years. And then was a waiter for a little while and then went back to school to become a teacher. I feel like I've only just figured out what I'm supposed to be doing, and I'm 37.
I mean, I think that's inspiring, that's to be honest. Yeah. I think it makes more sense to do it that way versus like, I'm 18, I'm going to commit myself to this.
Yeah.
And then...
yeah, which is what I think the experience for my parents was like. I mean, my mom went back to school when she was 30, but my dad said that he knew he wanted to be an engineer which is just like the most like Iranian thing
like
I can
think of.
Exactly. It's like, I want to be an engineer. He decided that when he was 5, and then he was an engineer. So
it's weird. At least in Syria, it feels like there are only like 3 options that you can be. Like as far as like the grades you get and stuff. I wonder if it's probably the same in the Middle East in general. But happy for your dad for realizing his dream. So you were a teacher, and you start doodling. What made you think like? What gave you the confidence to be like, hey, maybe I can get paid for this? Like, maybe I can take this further?
I think like most artists, it was more just a desire to be liked. And I was like, what can I do? And so I knew that I just wanted to do art full time. And I was kind of burned out on teaching. But I didn't have any experience and I didn't have like a background in it. So, and this is where the book comes in. Ended up moving to very rural Idaho, where like land is cheap, could buy, like build a tiny house, and then dedicated a year to working on cartooning. And then at the end of that year, went to New York and sold my first cartoon to the New Yorker.
Where in Idaho were you?
Custer County, which is like central. It's the size of Connecticut, but only has 4,500 people. And the nearest town is Mackey. And it was 20 minutes away and has 500 people. So it's quite the metropolis.
Interesting. I have spent some time in Pocatello, Idaho.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Pocatello's where I'd fly out of. So, a drive to Pocatello.
How far is that from Pocatello, just out of curiosity?
2 hours.
Oh, okay.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
Not
bad.
Interesting. I'm recently becoming familiar with Idaho, so...
I'm not familiar at all. So.
Yeah, I mean, most people, when I say Idaho, they think Iowa. And there's a shirt in the Mackey gas station that has the shape of Idaho, but it says Iowa on it. So I think it's just something that they get a lot. Why Idaho? Why Pocatello?
I have a family member there. I'll tell you off air, but a recent family member there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. I'm kind of curious how wanting to continue cartooning and moving to Idaho go together. Can you explain to me how that relates to each other?
Does rural Idaho and New Yorker cartooning not just go together for you?
I think it's just going over my head here. You have to help me out.
Yeah, I think a lot, most people are surprised when they hear that any New York cartoonist doesn't actually live in New York. And most of the cartoonists that I know do live in New York. And I wonder sometimes what my experience would have been like had I like done that instead.
Right.
But I think it was just the time, like having no overhead, having nothing really to do other than just work at this, to be able to like be in the quiet, be with the birds, occasionally drive into town. I think it was just moved from the San Francisco area where just like stuck in traffic for hours a day to being able to just like sit and exist. That allowed me to draw cartoons.
But like, just, this is the description in the press kit. I'm just going to read this sentence.
Okay.
You had never fished, gardened, hiked, hunted, or lived in a snowy place. So like, why, like, were you always curious about kind of living in the rural part of the country, or like where did that want come from?
Well, so my wife and I had visited on a whim, and it has that part of Idaho has like the most majestic mountains. I mean, they're incredible. And we had looked around, and like 6 acres was not very much. And I think it just sounded really romantic. Mm-hmm. Like, Trump's been elected. Let's move to middle of nowhere America and, like, make a go at it. And I think there probably would be other places that I would have been more interested in living, but lots of other people want to live there too, so it's more expensive. So I get, like, the beautiful mountains and it's affordable. So
yeah, that makes sense.
It is quite beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the graphic memoir, graphic novel, it gets into some really interesting interactions you had with people, which I really appreciate. And because it's a cartoon, it makes it a little bit more, I don't know, like, it's not as, like, terrifying, even though, like, the stuff that they're saying is kind of unsettling.
Sure, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
When there was, like, one part, forgive me if I'm, like, misquoting it, but I remember you meet someone that is, like, ISIS is here, and X, Y, and Z.
That was literally my first interaction, just moved to Idaho. And at that time, we actually, I moved the timeline slightly for the book, but we were just camping out on the land. And these figures emerge in the distance, silhouetted in a Western. And then there they are, and it's our neighbors. And they've brought wine and some glasses, and we're chatting. And one of the first things that my neighbor brings up is that ISIS is there.
Just right out of nowhere.
I was just like, welcome to Idaho.
This is,
I guess I should have expected it. But yeah, first interaction.
Do you think he said it? Like, I know the book is one thing, but, like, in real life, do you think he said it because he looked at you and he was trying to, like, assess? Or, like, was he just trying to have a conversation?
So yeah, I mean, that came on the heels of them asking what my background is. So Everyone, and I mentioned this a couple times in the book, everyone in small towns already knows who you are. So we had just gotten there, but they knew who we were, our names, and they had been debating where my name was from. And whenever somebody asks that question, I mean, particularly in that context, like, we're in the middle of nowhere, our neighbors show up and ask a question like, where's your name from? We've been debating it. There's the sort of fight or flight mode that kicks in. But then they were, you know, she had thought, I think it was, like, I forget what I say in the book, like, Iraqi, and he thought Libyan.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I told them it was Iranian, they told me that was okay. So gave me the thumbs up to be Iranian.
There definitely was a period of time where people were really shameless asking about ISIS. Like, there was at least several years where a good amount of people, when they would learn I was Syrian, the first question after that would be, what do you think of ISIS? as if I was going to tell them something like, I don't know.
Yeah. They just want the insider perspective.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. This one time I got really fed up about it and I said, like, I'm part of ISIS. Or, like, I said, I love them. And it was not a good joke in the long run, but yeah. I did not understand how so many people would ask that question.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, that's great. I mean, there are moments, and I mention a couple of them in the book where I was asked something and then, like, there are so many things I wish I would have said.
Yeah.
In the moment, but then I don't say any of those things. But sometimes when I'm trying to fall asleep at night, I'll still just, like, replay that moment and then try to come up with just the perfect zinger to come back with.
It always comes to you, like, days later, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
At least for me. Okay, let's take our first break. We'll be right back. Get a tour of the book. So don't go anywhere.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Well, speaking of Florida, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar just emailed about it. I'm subscribed to his Substacks, and he's like a very political writer, and you're like, Florida eviscerates education, in quotes, again.
Yeah, I just saw that AP psychology is not going to be offered anymore.
Oh, shit, what?
Because it talks about, like, sex and sexuality and, like, how you could change, you know, like, being a trans person. You know, it's just, like, talks about the psychology. You know, it's things that you, like, kind of get into, but, like, not even on that level that, like,
is
enough to really truly, I don't know, I know it's stupid. They're like, you can still do it, but as long as you like remove anything about like sex and like gender
dumb.
What it means to be like a trans person, basically.
Yeah. Well, good for Kareem. I'm glad that he's
He writes
he's
a
out
lot.
There.
His Substack is incredible. He like truly is out here writing. He's a great writer too. He's like funny.
Yeah. Do you want to bring us back in or should I?
Oh my god, he also reviews Barbenheimer. Okay. Anyway,
oh, he does.
I literally just kept reading. The headlines are always really long. It says Florida eviscerates education again. The sad desperation of the Biden impeachment talks. Community fights to take back library. Barbenheimer reviewed. Cat Stevens sings. It's like he covers like 40 different things. You're like,
that's
okay.
Funny.
Let's just. Do I just keep all of this in the episode? We could just start with you saying I got an email from Kareem.
Sure. We can keep this
great.
All in.
Okay, cool. I think that's funny.
Anyway, let's get back to you. Enough about Kareem and his Substack. We have talked about his Substack on this show before. So,
I mean, I kind of want to know what he thinks about Barbenheimer. So,
yeah, once I read, I'll email. I'll send you an email.
Yes, please send an update.
Or maybe I'll just link it.
I want a Substack where it's you just telling me what Kareem says on his Substack.
I know. I do love his Substack. It's so good. He's such an interesting writer, and I also love that he's like kind of petty, and he's kind of like he gets upset very easily, and I don't know. He's interesting.
Yeah.
What were we talking about? You? Okay. You. So, actually, real quick, I want to go back in time from what we were talking about. So you're in Idaho, but now we're gonna go.
Yeah.
Weep. That's a little rewind. So your parents, what actually brought them to America? Just to go to school, or like, why did they come
to
Oklahoma?
They were going to go to school, and the plan was that they would return once my dad was done with school. So, that was July 1978. So I think like lots of people who came at that time, they were like my mom. She had plans. Her birthday is in October, so she was going to go back for her birthday. And they didn't know that they wouldn't see. You know, my mom didn't get to go back for 10 years.
That's so sad.
Yeah. And I think my dad, it was like 14 years, something like that he didn't get to go back. Yeah.
That's a very common, same thing with my parents. They came before the revolution to go to college with plans to go back. And then just the revolution happened and they were like, I'll just stay here, I guess. Which is a very crazy thing when you think about it. If like all you have one idea in your mind, you're like, I'm gonna get my degree and I'm gonna go back and I'm gonna like work with my family, we're gonna do this stuff, whatever, I'm gonna be an engineer. And both my parents got engineering degrees and we're gonna go back. And it just like within like a year, it's all of a sudden like, no, you now make a life here.
Yeah.
Like your whole trajectory just changed. Like everything you thought you were going to do is just immediately like halted. And you're like, well, better change it up. And I think why I think Iranian immigrants are the best immigrants. No, I'm just joking. I was thinking about this yesterday when I was actually writing my own Substack. And I was like, it's so truly surreal. Like the immigrant experience is like unlike anything.
Yeah.
Like you come to America, you don't speak English, and yet you're like, I'm going to go to college. Guess what? All the college courses are in English. You're like at night watching TV, learning to speak English. During the day, you're taking college courses in English while simultaneously taking ESL classes to learn English. It's like, what is happening? And then you're also like planning your whole future.
And have kids maybe.
And potentially have kids.
Yeah.
And you're like trying to deal with that. And that's like incredible.
Yeah. I mean, you think that's hard. Imagine moving to Idaho.
Oh my God.
You really tried to equate the two.
Idaho, where they speak weird.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like trying to learn how to speak like an Idahoan while at the same time fit in. Yeah, that's
exactly. Sitting in my tiny house with my surround sound, looking at cold weather and not actually having to go out into it while I draw cartoons of dog butts. I think you nailed it. It's kind of like hearing my parents talk about it, it really does feel like a death of sorts.
Yeah,
but you don't get like the closure. I mean, they had going away parties, but I'm sure they would have been much bigger if they had known that they wouldn't be back for like 15 years.
It's also a different kind of immigration because the choice gets taken away from you. Yeah. Like my parents chose to come here at some point, you know what I mean? But your parents didn't get the luxury of that. They just kind of like had the things they had with them, and they probably weren't even expecting to like raise American kids even. Like that's just so
No, they weren't. Let me tell you, tell you every single day, like you are so Americanized, and you're like, I'm 33. Like, yeah, it's a little late. I'm pretty Americanized. Sorry to break it to you.
Yeah, I mean, my dad's still sending me applications to medical school.
Oh, yeah, law school all day.
Right, law school, grad school, it's all
day. Yeah.
Literally yesterday, he asked me for a breakdown of my sort of, like, monthly salary and how much I made and, like, sort of what my, like, buying potential was. And I was like, leave me alone. I cannot do this with you right now. It's also, like, call me at 9:45 p.m. to get into this. Like, I don't want to talk to you about this.
That's so funny. It's like he treats you like an investment too. He's like, how's my investment?
I mean,
doing?
I am an investment to him. I 100% am his investment, where he's just like, and what are you sort of like, what are you kicking back?
Yeah.
And I'm like, nothing yet. Leave me alone. Okay, sorry. We digress. So your parents come, they have to stay because the revolution happens. And then, so your dad, you said, was studying to become an engineer?
Yeah.
So what was your mom's sort of trajectory? Because
my mom was 17 and my dad was 19 when they got married. And then had a kid when she just turned 19 when she had my sister. So, her trajectory was actually reading my dad's textbooks to him at night.
Oh, wow.
And highlighting them for him, and then taking care of my sister. Yeah, she didn't go back to school until she was 30. So,
what did she do at 30?
She became a nurse.
Nice.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. So that's what she
did. Good for her.
She's
tough to go to school when you have kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
Again.
So
resilient.
Yeah. I have a 3-year-old right now, and it's tough doing anything. I can't imagine. Yeah. Going to school.
You're like, I have to record a podcast. You're like, oh. And your mom's like fully studying how to save people's lives. Yeah. They are so resilient.
Yeah.
You asked me to do anything right now. I'm like, how dare you?
I mean, part of my work today, I had to rationalize. I was just sitting like back and reading a novel. And I was like, this is like research for work. Like I am working hard doing this.
I watch a movie and call that research, you know? Yeah, like
exactly. This Love Island episode is not going to
watch
itself.
Like, I have to watch it. It goes on every day.
I'm studying humanity.
I know, it is so true. I really will be like, Mom, I'm watching The Bachelor. Can you keep it down? I have to record a podcast about it. My mom's like, are literally go fuck yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking to my mom about this recently where I was doing the math in my head, and it occurred to me that when she was in her, 20, when she was, when Nevermind, right, Smells Like Nirvana's album came out, she was 32. And I'm like, I'm still, going on Pitchfork, reading, best new, albums and, listening to stuff. And my mom just, was completely unaware of all, music post, Goo Goosh, 19, whatever she was listening to in 1978, REO Speedwagon. There was just, nothing. It was just, this cutoff point. And even though she would have been, the prime age for, Talking Heads or whatever, she just, completely missed all of that.
Yeah, because she was, has priorities of, other things, taking care of you and being a nurse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, our parents are incredible. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I think getting to write the book, and then more recently I've been writing just shorter form autobiographical comics for The New Yorker. I mean, I joked before about how going to Idaho was as tough, and obviously it wasn't, but it has given me some a deeper appreciation for my parents' experience now that I'm a parent, now that I've experienced just a modicum of what they experience being my minorities and, migrants to a place. And also as I've been struggling with my own Iranian American identity. I mean, I feel like I've gotten a little bit closer to them and a greater appreciation for what they went through.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's even just thinking about being a minor, I don't know, being new somewhere, not knowing the language and all this stuff. Or people looking at you funny. It's all these things that, for me, I think I would, not be able to handle it. They just had to keep doing it and living it and talk with their accents and keep trying to work and all this stuff. It's just, it's unreal, I think. And then they don't even treat it like a big deal, most of the time, too.
Yeah.
It's just this is what we had to do, and you're alive, and be grateful.
Yeah. Well, I hope all of our parents will be listening to this, and they could just see how brave they are.
I mean, they don't even think of it that way, though. But they won't even consider themselves brave. That's the thing.
Yeah.
They're just like, this is life.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're like, stop complaining. Yeah. What? That's what you got out of it? You just told me to stop complaining?
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, I'm in London now, and I did get lost on the tube twice, which was a pretty harrowing experience.
That's basically what they went through.
Exactly.
Basically.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Are you living in London now?
No, just here for a couple of months. My wife is editing a new film of hers, so my work's pretty mobile, so I get
that
to draw cartoons wherever.
Heck yeah.
So where do you live right now?
Salt Lake City.
Salt Lake City? You're all over the place. Tell us about SLC. I've spent a lot of time in my life in SLC,
It was
my parents, the first place they came to America. They came separately and then met here, but they both are Utah people. They came to Utah first.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, I still refer to it as Salt Lake City. I'm not comfortable enough to refer to it as SLC. So, I mean, it's definitely a step up. When we first moved to Idaho, there was a position that opened up at the University of Utah, which is why we're there. My wife has a position there, and she was like, should I apply? And I was like, absolutely not. There's no way I'm ever going to move to Salt Lake City. And then after having lived in rural Idaho for a few years, I was like, please move to Salt Lake City. So it definitely feels like a step up, but we moved there just as the pandemic, was starting. So we got there and then it was lockdown. But I feel like the past year and a half, I've gotten to know the place a little bit better. But then, being back, whenever I visit New York and then, being here, I'm like, oh, this is what a real city is. So, I can appreciate Salt Lake, but, yeah.
Did you move from Idaho to Salt Lake?
Yeah. So, I'm just, nice. I went from east to west, and I'm slowly working my way back at east.
I like Salt Lake City. I think it's, It's a beautiful place.
Yeah.
I've spent more time in like Holiday, Utah, just like one of the suburbs. Okay. But I think it's just such a nice, I love to visit. I grew up going there a lot. My parents, you know, obviously they have a lot of family friends there, but also my mom's best friend and my dad's best friend still live there. And so I spent a lot of time going there growing up, and I just find it like such a lovely, I mean, outside of just, you know, the Mormonism and all that, like it's such a beautiful landscape. And
yeah, I mean, the mountains are incredible and they just surround you. And yeah, and like even like the Mormonism, I mean, there's like the church that kind of looms over the city.
Yeah.
But even still, like, I mean, I don't think I really encounter Mormonism on a
no
day-to-day that's nice basis.
You have to kind of be in it to like really experience it. But I think like it's now also a pretty multicultural city. Like I know like a lot of Iranians there. So
I just discovered the it was just in time for the Iranian New Year. I discovered an Iranian grocery store and restaurant there.
Hell yeah. So,
yeah, there's a lot of Iranians. I can introduce you to some. I know a lot of Iranians in Salt Lake City. That's kind of something about me that's really interesting. Is I know a lot of Iranians in Salt Lake City. What was I going to say about Salt Lake City? Now I'm forgetting. Well, it's nice out
there. Break?
Great place, good people.
Yeah, great place. Nice people.
Let's take our second break before we get too rambly into something else. But when we come back, I have a question that I'm curious about.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
And we are back. Real quick, I want to say something else before Shereen asks her question. If you get a chance to go to Park City, do you ever go out to Park City?
I mean, I was there for Sundance in 2019. Well, I haven't been there since.
Great outlets.
Okay.
I don't know. It's kind of in your Persian blood. You might like outlets.
Yeah. Always looking for the best deal.
Because those Park City outlets, let me tell you, they're good. All right. So I just wanted to give you that sort of advice.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I mean, my dad's definitely into finding the best deals.
So oh, you got to take your dad to the Park City outlets.
Yeah.
He would love them.
It was sweet. My dad's definitely like a shopper. And when we were in Mackey, Idaho, he visited one time. And like the one place that you could go to was this consignment shop. And he ended up like he just had to go somewhere. And he ended up getting this like little car mouse for his computer.
Oh, that's funny.
And that's what he walked away with, that and cowboy boots.
Oh, heck yeah.
I felt like was
iconic.
Yeah.
Iconic. Wait, okay, speaking of your dad though, this is not the question I wanted to ask, but I'm curious now. Have your parents, how have they reacted to, like, you expressing your life this way, like in cartoons or whatever? Like, how do they read your stuff? Are they curious about it?
Yeah. I mean, they're into it. I think they were hoping that they would be a bigger part in my book. The book, initial book that I was actually going to write was going to be about them. And then slowly it just became about me.
That's really funny.
And then they both wanted me to independently dedicate the book to them, like each individually. But they both get a thanks in the back of the book.
That is so funny. Yeah,
but they like it. And I think now that I've been, like, I just had a comic that was just about my dad in the New Yorker. So I've been writing more about them. I think my mom's a little unhappy with the way that I draw her, but I think my dad was pretty happy. But although it's easier with my dad because he has a mustache and facial hair, is like, it's the best thing when you're drawing people.
Right. So easy. Cover up the face.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So glasses, hat, and a mustache, and you're good to go.
Wow, perfect. Okay. I have two questions. I don't have to ask them at the same time, but I do have two questions I want to get to eventually. The first one is, did you ever actually get to experience, like, what you wanted out of being in rural America, like the calm or the nature, or, like, can you tell us the good side of that experience?
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of good stuff, and part of what I was trying to do with my book was, I think I went into it with certain expectations, good and bad, and I think people, when they read the book, they'll probably be expecting certain things, like Middle Eastern America moves to middle of nowhere, where Idaho, and like some of the uncomfortable moments did happen, but for the most part, I mean, it was really pleasant. The people were welcoming, they were kind. I learned a lot from them, from like gardening and like installing interior tongue and groove siding, building fences. And then there was just like, yeah, there was the quiet. I mean, it was like almost 3 years, and there's just a certain rhythm you get into when you just have what feels like hundreds of acres around you and like just no one. So yeah, I mean, there was definitely a lot of good that came out of it. And I got into birding before it was cool in the pandemic. So
you got into what?
Birding.
Oh, birding.
Birding.
I said burning, like going to Burning Man, and I was like, okay.
It's been a while. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. You think that just?
I discovered it. birding.
Got it.
Which I think was like one of the. I think it's hard not to when there's just like it's the quiet. I mean, there isn't the sound of construction or cars going by, and you're waiting for the sound of the Canadian geese to let you know that like this god awful winter is finally over.
Did you find it pretty, for the most part, easy for you to adapt to the quiet versus like having never been in like living there before? Or
I think by the end I was definitely ready to go, but I think like it was like a city skin that I think I shed pretty quickly. Yeah,
I would imagine you learn how to be like slower and intentional and stuff, or is that not true?
I mean, I think you have to. I think you have to be. I mean, there's just, there isn't a lot to do, so you just, but I mean, there's also, I mean, like, which sounds like I'm like Henry David Thoreau, just gonna like go out there in the woods, but I still had like my Wi-Fi and like my phone.
And
I got at one point, like, this doesn't make it in the book, but like it's Super Nintendo, they released like the little mini one, and so like I made my way through Legend of Zelda and Secret of Mana, and like there's like that like month where I was like, I have to get through these games, and so like I shut the blinds and the curtains.
So you weren't out every day in your field and gardening or anything.
Shirtless and chopping wood with an axe. I mean, they're definitely, I mean, it's hard to escape like the modern world. I think particularly as like a cartoonist, like Instagram, for better or worse, is a big part of what we do, and so there's like some like necessity, or at least that's what I tell myself. I rationalize it's like, this is work, I need to be,
I mean, it does feel like that with so many professions nowadays. It's like, if you're it feels like you have to make yourself relevant, and that's up to you to be on social media being like, hey guys, remember me, I do this. So it's a little bit, it's a lot, but
yeah
it feels necessary, I guess, now.
Yeah. Or that's what they just what they tell us.
That's what they tell us. That's what they tell us.
That's what they tell us.
Okay. That's sad. My second question that I had. Yeah, it is sad. Was there anything that was like too uncomfortable or bad that you didn't put in the book that happened to you, or were you really honest as far as what happened?
Yeah, or, like, I mean, I think I'm trying to. Yeah, I think I was pretty honest. I mean, there definitely were other uncomfortable moments, so sort of equivalent experiences to what I write about in the book, but I felt like I didn't have to include all of, you know, the microaggressions, or the, you know, the stares that went on too long, or the uncomfortable questions. Because I felt like I had, like, you know, one or two experiences that kind of summed up that genre of uncomfortable ness. But no, I mean, there wasn't anything that was like so bad that
that's,
I didn't.
That's relieving, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, there was a certain like negotiation that I tried to do, where I felt like I wanted to be critical of some things that I experienced and things that I saw from the place, but then I also wanted it to feel like nuanced and to be sensitive to the people and their experience there, because again, it wasn't all bad, and certain things that weren't really for me just weren't for me, because culturally it was just not what I had grown up with.
Yeah.
And so part of like the realization in the book at the end of it is like, after having my daughter, was like, spoiler alert, is like, is this the place that I want? Like, is this the culture that I want her to grow up into? And if you do grow up into it, like, great. Like, if I had been, you know, if I had been born in Oklahoma and grown up there, like, that would have been great, I'm sure. But, like, is this what I wanted for my daughter?
Yeah, well, especially because you grew up yourself in a really diverse place, too.
Yeah, so, yeah. Like, I mean, my parents gave me that opportunity, and I felt like I had to do the same thing for my daughter. And like, they taught, like, there's a science teacher who taught like flat earth theory in the middle school there.
Wow.
And so there was just like many reasons not to.
Wow.
He also told one of his students not to take their insulin shots because he would give her a diet that would cure her diabetes. So
great.
I feel like that's a lawsuit waiting to happen. Get on that.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Mm. Is there, I want people to actually read your book, but do you want to tell us like an anecdote that maybe you didn't include, or like one that really stands out to you that,
Yeah, I mean, there was, I mean, there's like a good end. I can share like a, well, I mean, I guess they're both not like, one's good, they're both a mixture, I guess. I can start with like the worst one. I was at a friend of mine, he's a character in the book who I named Josiah. He had invited me to his mom's wedding. And while I was there, there was a woman who came up to me and she's like, oh, I heard that you're Iranian, which is always a great way to start a conversation.
Right, yeah.
And she's like, I don't know what to do. My kids, they've been asking about the Quran and they like are curious about it. You know, like, what do I do? And that's one of those moments where I was just like, there's so many things I wish I would have said. But I think in the moment I was just like, you should read it with them, which I feel like is like,
Are you Muslim? Like, is your family Muslim? Or like,
no,
is that?
I mean, I'm not. I mean, like my parents are.
Okay.
I think my dad more than my mom. I think my mom, as she's gotten older, she's kind of, sort of shed some of that.
But it's not like they knew anything about you. They just like, they heard you were Iranian and then they were like,
exactly.
The Quran.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So then I whipped out my pocket Quran and we sat and we read it together. So it's just like little experiences like that. And I know that there wasn't any like malice or anything.
Right.
It was just, there was like a curiosity or like a, I don't know, like a concern, I guess. And I was like the wise man that she was coming to ask about this.
Mm-hmm.
So like, that's one of those like little things that didn't make it into the book. But there was another one where, again, Josiah, he had, and I like this because I think that it starts with something that's not great, but then like reveals some like humanity and something that helped bond us to the place where like he came up to me one night, we were having a beer and he was like, I need to apologize for like something my dad said. And I thought to myself, I was like, I don't, like I've met your dad once and I don't remember him saying anything like offensive. And he had said that when he was talking to his dad, I came up in conversation and his dad was like, oh, that terrorist. And I know, bum bum. And then Josiah was like, you need to take that back. Like, that's really mean. It's offensive. And then like, I wasn't like privy to this conversation. There's no reason I had to know about it. But then Josiah comes to me, apologizes to me on behalf of his dad for this thing that I didn't even know he said. And then when we were invited to, his dad invites my wife and me to his house for this party, apologizes to me in person, again, for something that there's no reason I had to know about it. And then gives my wife this beautiful silk kerchief that belonged to his mom, you know, and she still has this thing as like a way of apology. And I thought that it was like this great, like, it was like this beautiful, like human moment of, this person apologizing to me for something that he probably just meant as a joke, gives a gift, and ended up being this like great source of support while we were, while we were there. Yeah. And so like that didn't make it into the book, even though it's like a nice moment that begins with something not so nice.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice that they didn't have any reason to make it like a learnable moment, but they did. And I think that's really nice because most people wouldn't get checked by something like that. You know what I mean? Like, it would just be like a ha ha, very funny.
Exactly. And I thought that it said something about Josiah, and it's one of the reasons why we ended up becoming friends. He actually, one of the things that does happen in the book is he asks me about where my family is from. And it's one of those, again, like, moments, but I tell him. And then his first follow-up question is, what's the food like there? And then like a week later, he invited me over for kebabs.
He
made it with elk meat that he had hunted. And I don't know how many people have had elk kebabs, but it's like, it's a great variation on a classic. Yeah. And like, it was funny. He ended up texting me that week and he was like, do you have any saffron? I don't think the local market has any.
I feel like that is the best actual question to ask when you find out what someone is, or like if you're curious about what someone is, because like food is like the ultimate, like, what's that word? Like a unifier, right?
Yeah. And I feel like particularly in like that moment in that place, because Iranian food is so, there's just like, it's meat and like rice. And then like, Idaho food is like, it's like meat, you know, not as much rice, but there's lots of meat. So it's not like that far off.
Yeah. Well, elk kebabs.
Yeah. Yeah. I recommend it. We were gifted plenty of elk while we were there. It was one of the things that I did not reveal, that I was a vegetarian for almost the entirety of the time that I was there, particularly since Josiah and his family, they're ranchers, and so I didn't want to come out as a vegetarian.
But you ate
vegetarian.
The kebabs.
I did,
right?
Yeah.
Okay,
I mean,
good.
Like, yeah. I was offered it plenty, and like, I'm like, my, and I'm not vegetarian now, but my vegetarianism then was definitely like, my in terms of ethics, being like a good guest is definitely higher.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
I agree with that 100%. It's just
particularly when they have like the Second Amendment embroidered on their like wall, and they're serving you elk. It's like, I will eat the elk. Yeah.
I will eat the elk. I would eat the elk too. Is it gamey? Yeah. What's that like?
No. He made it sort of, it's kubide. So it's like the sort of like ground, like elk. So it didn't taste, kind of just tasted like,
like ground beef or meat rather.
Yeah, maybe a little more tender. So
interesting. Wow, never even thought of an elk kebab until today.
Yeah, and then while I was there, gourmet sabzi, it's my favorite Iranian dish. I ended up making it, and I made it with some elk that I was gifted from my neighbor. My mother was pretty aghast though, because I had always wanted to learn how to cook Iranian food, and she always wanted to teach me, and I never did. And so I got it into my head while I was there. I'm going to make this dish because I have elk. And so I found a recipe online, and it was by this woman, like Mary Patterson, which was just like insult to injury for my mom. That
Mary Patterson.
Yeah, not only was I learning how to cook Iranian food online, it was from somebody named Mary Patterson.
Oh, Mary. Where is she now?
That's interesting.
So
I'm gonna ask my dad about elk kebabs.
Yeah, you should. I mean,
we're so lambed out over here.
Yeah. Well, you can't go wrong with lamb. So.
Yeah. We're coming to the. What you do?
No. That's from My Big Fat Greek Wedding, where he's like,
"Oh, right, you're
like,
right."
She's like, "I'll make lamb," and he's like, "I'm vegetarian," and she goes, "I'll make lamb." I just never forget that line. I'll make lamb. I always say that to my dad because we love My Big Fat Greek Weddings. Holds up, you guys. Go watch it. It holds up. It's so funny.
That is the movie that unites all brown people.
Yeah.
Like, I hear more brown people talk about it than I do Greek people.
It's the quintessential, like, immigrant family that's so funny because it just hits all those tropes where you're like, yep.
Yeah.
I'll make lamb.
We're coming to the end of the podcast. This has been a great conversation. Thank you so much for being here. I guess, like, the last question maybe we can end on is, like, if there was, like, one thing you want someone to take away from reading this book, like, what would it be?
What an incredible storyteller I am. I think is the number one. I think I would want them to come away with it. Again, like, I was trying to give a nuanced portrait of a place that, like, while I had things that I felt like I had to critique, it really was just this, like, beautiful 3 years. And, you know, I got so much from the place and its people that, I mean, I hope I did justice to it, to both the place and its people. And, like, I hope people, I mean, I don't name the town in the book, but I hope it would definitely make them want to maybe visit.
Yeah.
Have we said the title of the book?
Yeah, I said it in the beginning, didn't I?
I don't think so.
No?
No.
Oh my God.
But it's called This Country, Searching for Home in Very Rural America.
Yeah, the takeaway that I want everyone to walk away with is
the title.
That it's called This Country.
Exactly.
It has a title.
Yeah.
That's the takeaway. Do not forget that it has a title.
Yeah.
So go get This Country, Searching for Home in Very Rural America, which is technically out now when you guys hear this. Right?
Nope. No.
Oh,
this
no,
comes
you're,
out.
You're right. You're right. You're right.
September 12th.
It will be
but
out.
It's almost.
I confused the dates. No, you're right. It will be out very soon, but you can pre-order.
Yeah, please. And please pre-order. I think people often they're hesitant to pre-order, particularly now with like Amazon where it's like I order it and it shows up. But pre-orders do help authors.
Yeah, because you know your pre-orders, that's how you get on the New York Times bestseller. I know. Because I Googled it once.
Yeah.
Highly recommend everyone read and get this book. I think it's just like the best. Honestly, I love the medium of cartoon and also like kind of serious and also kind of beautiful storytelling because it's just like easy to get through and at the same time, like heartwarming. I don't know. It's I feel like anyone can read this, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And anyone can get something out of it.
Ditto. And it was equally, I mean, it was fun to draw. It's nice to be able to draw something and not have to describe it. So.
Right, exactly. Is there anywhere on the internet you would like people to follow you? Do you have any handles you want to plug? Anything like that?
Yeah, I mean on Instagram, Navidem. You can that's where I am. I spend enough time on there, I don't try to go on to other platforms.
Navidem. And that's Navidem.
Yeah, M. Yeah.
Okay, got it. So everyone go follow Navid. And get its amazing book. You won't regret it. And I guess I'll just wrap us out. Are you guys ready to say goodbye?
Yeah, thanks for having me.
No, of course. Okay, this is... you have to come back, too, whenever you make something new. Or just when you want to hang out. This was fun. This is Ethnically Ambiguous, Ethnically Amb, A-M-B on Twitter, Ethnically Ambig, A-M-B-I-G on Instagram. I am Shireen. It's Shirohiro on Instagram and Shirohiro666 on Twitter.
And I'm at Anahosi on Twitter. I was like, where am I? Anahosi on Twitter, at SellingHosnie on Instagram.
And you have a Substack.
That and is I have really a good. Substack, sellinghostnia.substack.com, which I don't contribute to as much as I would like. I always write. Every beginning of all my Substack posts is like, I'm sorry it takes me so long to write these. Because one, I get really bad writer's block because I just sometimes am too like clogged down with work. But then also, I'm also just, I write about it. I feel like I'm just writing emails about emails about emails about emails about emails about emails. That's like my whole life is writing emails about emails. Work sucks. I should move to
but
Idaho.
Regardless, yeah, you should move to Idaho. We should all just go.
You should. I actually wish I got more emails. So if you want to just forward me some of your emails, I will happily.
You do not want these emails.
Happily read them.
No, but your Substack is still, it's worth the wait. Whatever you do come out. I like the way you write. Anyway, that's the episode, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.